I wasn't a partner guy before. And then afterwards, I was like, I need some wisdom here because there's no way this is going to take me forever on my own. But I think because I was, I was young and even in business, I didn't have partners. And looking back and, what I wish could have happened differently, I think I would have partnered with somebody had I continued in that business, partnered with someone that could bring, be that extra person with me to make these decisions. And I'll certainly do that the next go around. I think there's so much value in having partnerships.
Welcome to the Real Freedom Show, where we inspire you to pursue your passion to gain time and financial freedom through opportunities in real estate. I'm your host, Mike Swenson. Let's get some real freedom together. Everybody, welcome to another episode of Real Freedom, Real Estate Leverage Freedom, where we highlight people building time and financial freedom through opportunities in real estate. I'm your host, Mike Swenson. If you want to get started on your real estate investing journey, check out our website, freedomthroughrealestate.com. Great spot for you to be able to learn, hear different people's stories, and really figure out their journey. I just want to highlight great stories to inspire people to pursue whatever passion that might be within real estate. And as we learn over time, things change. And even though you're in real estate, you might move over to something different, or life happens and you have to move over to something different. But there's a ton of cool stuff happening in the real estate space. And that's why we exist, is to highlight those awesome stories. So today we've got Ian Noble here. Ian is the founder of Run Steady Investments, has a background of owning a laundromat business for a long time, up to 14 locations, over 90 employees, and then transitioned to now being in real estate full-time in the Austin market, as well as Colorado, work as a limited partner, general partner, really highlighting mobile home parks, self-storage facilities, debt funds, and other stuff. So you've got a ton of experience on the real estate side. So excited to hear about your journey. So Ian, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So just give us a little bit of a background, what you did prior to getting into real estate, and we'll go from there.
Well, I'm in Austin, Texas. I grew up here. And I got into a family business. It was a dry cleaning company.
Dry cleaning. Sorry, I said
yeah. No, it's
laundromat, didn't
okay.
I? Yeah, dry cleaning. My bad.
There's a laundromat component to it, but we were more catered to, like, individual pieces and pressing the items. But yeah, long-standing family business. Got involved with that after going to college here, and eventually bought it from my dad. He was burnt out from the business and had removed himself. And so I spent my last 14 years of my life in the dry cleaning business, and owe a lot to it. I love all things small business. It got me into real estate very quickly, and so my happy place is kind of the overlap of where those two meet. So I would run my business, and then everything extra went into real estate. And I started about this 2014 was my first rental. Started buying single family rentals each year, trying to get something. Another rental, and then eventually migrated into some triple net commercial leases, which I'm still an active investor in. I still do that as well as a personal investor. But yeah, I love all things real estate and small business.
Talk a little bit for people, that work W-2 jobs. The goal is to become an entrepreneur, start their own business. You've also got people who are maybe talking about buying or acquiring a business. I know just, listening to your backstory and hearing you on other, past episodes, that just because you have a small business and it's well established doesn't mean it's push the easy button and everything's simple and you just get to sit there and be Mr. Passive and let everything run itself. So real quick, just would love to kind of hear some of those experiences being an entrepreneur and just the real life decision making, problem solving, things like that that you have to handle, that it's not all just passive and simple as sometimes people make it out to be.
Yeah, it's funny. A lot of people throw that passive word around, especially with business and in real estate. But on the business side, I don't believe that there is a world where you can be a very successful passive owner. I think that for, some of the really successful people you may see online, maybe they have really large teams that they've set up. But if we're, speaking specifically to you and you're in a W-2 and you're thinking, okay, I want to maybe get into business for myself, which I highly encourage, but you have to know if it's the right thing for you. You mentioned struggles, and a lot of the struggles obviously is staffing, sales, advertising, you name it, to whereas before, if you're coming from a W-2 role to where your job is X and you perform on that and then you go home, I'm not to say that that's easy either, but small business never stops. And so you have to really be ready to dive in, you know, take the leap and invest in yourself, because at the end of the day, you know, if you have a no fail mentality, you can do it, but you just need to know that unlike a W-2, everyone else's success and their family depends on you. If you have employees, you know, you are their I don't want to say their caretaker. You're the one that allows them to, you know, take care of their family and support their dreams. So there's a lot more that goes into it than just, you know, I want to buy this business. That being said, I highly encourage it. I think there's no better way to make a living and a very good living. And I think a lot of people that get into real estate also have had some successes in the small business world to where they can, you know, use funds from that to then transition and start building their little real estate empire.
So talk a little bit about getting into real estate. So you had mentioned, you know, wanting to take funds and, you know, buying single family properties. Why did you want to make that transition into real estate, or why did you want to get your feet wet into real estate to begin with? Kind of what was it going to accomplish for you? And then did you see at that time a path of like, oh yeah, I think I might do this more down the road, or did it just kind of evolve over time?
I was in my early 20s when I first started to get involved with it, and I'd seen my dad. So I grew up and had, you know, the privilege of seeing his lifestyle. And I think a lot of it came from having real estate. And so he specifically was in commercial triple net properties, usually like single tenant operations. But I just saw that he didn't have to go to work that often. And I wanted that too. And I knew it was, you know, you read these books, read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you know, and you figure out like everyone who wants to start, I advise if you haven't read that book, go read it. And I just got started. And there wasn't honestly much thought to it. I always share this with people because sometimes it feels out of touch. But if you want to get involved and you want to do it yourself, like to learn the ropes, single family is a very good way to start. It's not going to cash flow much. Don't quit your day job. But it will help you, you know, understand how the business works. And you don't have to overcomplicate things. I'm not kidding to where the first couple of properties, it was no more, you know, underwriting than on a napkin, maybe, you know, what's my mortgage? What will rent be in this neighborhood? Don't overthink it and just get started, because when you get stuck, you know, then you're stuck on the sidelines. And for every couple of years that go by, the window closes for you getting involved. And also it's, you know, you lost another couple of years of that tenant paying off your property. So do not overcomplicate stuff when you want to first get involved. Start with your local market, something you can, you know, drive by and touch. And I think that will help you get involved.
It's interesting because I hear, you know, everybody talks about, oh, if I just owned this 5 years ago or 10 years ago. And yeah, it's like, you know, we always say that, you know, the two best times to plant a tree, 20 years ago and today. And so if you're not started yet, find a way to get started. And then to your point, talking about starting with your local market and starting with what you know, because I think sometimes too, yeah, we try to overthink it and we try to be so sophisticated right out of the gate. But the reality is yeah, just find a way to get started and figure out what that looks like. For me, it was a property that I literally drove by on my way between work and home was my first flip property, because I figured, oh, I can just, you know, load up the tools in the back of the car and, you know, stop yeah. by and do some work on the property, and kept it simple. And now that's changed. And that was, you know, 15 years ago, but you're getting your feet wet and you're starting to flex that muscle. So when you bought your first property or two, you had mentioned really just kind of back of a napkin. Did you have an idea of, would it even positively cash flow? Were you thinking at all about buying it from more of an appreciation perspective, or even, you know, like a tax benefit? Was there a reason why, other than you knew your dad did it, or kind of what were you hoping to gain from just getting started very nonchalantly and not sophisticated?
Yeah, I'd say, so this is rewind to 2014. I had no idea about tax benefits. I wish I would have. And it was cash flow. I wasn't looking at it from an appreciation standpoint either. And I still do that today. I don't think that anybody should bank on appreciation. You don't know what, you know, what will happen. So focus on cash flow from day one. I'd listened to a lot of Bigger Pockets podcasts way back in the day. And I remember the message over and over was like, if you can, you know, cash flow $200, $300, go do it, and then go do it again. Mm-hmm. And so I never expected much, because it wasn't, you know, it was what I was trying to build up, but my income came from work and from my business. And so that's why I say, like, there's a good opportunity to overlap, whether you have your own business or you have a W-2 job, you know, keep that and keep stacking up these properties if you want to take the active route. And then you can eventually build something, you know. And again, you're not going to see this. You won't see the results of it for 10 years. And then when 10 years gets there, then you think, man, I've got these properties that the tenant has either paid off or is close to it, or they're working, you know, I'm not putting into it anymore. Well, that's the goal at least. And so then you can really like step back and say, wow, I built, this is the wealth component of what I, you know, I have the cash and the income from my main thing, but now here's my wealth. This is my see you later. I'm going to step away someday ticket from what I've built up slowly over time.
So when you were finding those properties, were these things that were on market, off market? How did you kind of decide what was a good deal at the time?
MLS, just it was,
Yeah.
we're on market. I didn't have, I think I signed up with a realtor saying, hey, I'm looking for this particular price point. I knew the areas already at the time. So again, I mentioned in the beginning, I live in Austin. Austin's market really skyrocketed from COVID. But when I started, you know, with these properties, it was a lot different back in the day. So the rules that may have applied back then, certainly you may not be able to obtain those sorts of deals now. But again, you got to get started and don't overcomplicate it. There's all these, I see things online like, you know, how you can wholesale houses, whether you want it, you can flip houses, you can be a, you know, a long-term rent, you can do short-term. There's so many options to make money in the industry and to get involved. You just have to pick what fits your lifestyle. Like Mike, you mentioned flipping, right? Like flipping probably has the, if done right, the highest profit margin. You can take away the most from that. But I don't know, do you still flip?
Nope.
You know, probably got tired, right? Like it's a lot. There's a lot of stress that comes along with it. So yeah, to answer your question, MLS was my, you know, my ticket in.
Well, and where I'm kind of going with that too is how did you get your start? It was not super sophisticated with something on market that didn't really cash flow much, and you didn't really have a big plan or future of what you want to be. Because I think a lot of times people feel like they've got to map out this 10-year plan, and I'm going to do this and it's going to grow. And no, I think it's just get started, right? It doesn't have to be, I just know that I need to do this or want to do this, and we'll figure out what the next step is. But I've just got to figure out a way to get started. And that's kind of your story, right? It's not like you spent a lot of time going super in depth. It's, I just know I need to get a property and I find it on the MLS. And I'm still a big advocate here in Minnesota. Like, there's good deals to be had on the MLS because, I feel like you've got people that have said, I want to sell. You have motivated sellers, and there's less digging you have to do with off-market properties. We've been through off-market properties, and they're like, oh, we don't want the tenants to know we're trying to sell. And so if you look at it, you have to pretend you're doing an insurance inspection or things like that. Or
I've done
then you, yeah,
that
and then you like
before.
find red flags, and the owner doesn't really have the information. And so there's just a lot of, it's different too. So I want people to know, like, you don't have to go at it with this super intense plan. It's just go get started, figure out a way to get started, or partner up with somebody else if you can't do it yourself. But it doesn't have to be sophisticated. And then obviously over time, what you've done has grown more sophisticated, but it didn't start that way.
No, not at all. And especially now is a good time. There's a lot of inventory out there. And if you're a buyer, it's a good opportunity. If you want to, you know, we're talking about single family specifically, go for it. People stand behind, you know, the excuse of high interest rates, but it won't last forever. Act like it will. You know, when you're doing your math and you're, you know, pretend that it's going to stay this way so that you don't, you know, overthink or overestimate what you might earn from that property. But yeah, get started. Nothing's holding you back, and you know, it's easier than you think to get involved.
And I know somebody listening to this too is going to be like, well, he's in Austin. Austin is unique. It's a different market. My market's not like that, right? So eliminate that thinking right away, right? You can find ways that are going to work in any market. Just because somebody happened to be in Austin, yes, they may have had some success, but you can find success in any market or a nearby market, right?
You know, being in Austin now, and you're right, like there was an advantage for what how it grew, but I don't like Austin as an investor right now. It's so hard to cash flow, a lot of cash flow negative properties. So I actually don't look. I don't seek out single family homes anymore, but I also don't actively look in Austin like I used to.
Because you've learned, right? You've learned and got more sophisticated as you went. Are you looking to get started or scale in real estate investing but don't know your next step? Are you overwhelmed thinking about finding deals, analyzing deals, doing due diligence, and managing properties on top of it? go ahead and push the easy button and invest with us. Real estate investing is what we do full time. We've done dozens of deals with hundreds of doors. We have the knowledge and experience to handpick the best deals that most investors can't find. We've got large off-market deals all the time where you can hopefully find returns and economies of scale that you just can't find on your own. The best thing is it's 100% passive to you for less capital than you put down trying to acquire a property on your own. Don't let this year go by where you don't make the leap, add to your portfolio, or you just sit in analysis by paralysis. To find out more, visit freedomthroughrealestate.com and click on invest. You can book a call and learn more there. So get to scaling your portfolio now with us by your side. So let's kind of talk about that next phase. So talk about your transition from having your dry cleaning business, your decision to decide to sell and maybe get into real estate more focused. How did that play out for you?
So if you're in business, you can relate that it's emotionally taxing. And I wasn't an expert on like delegating time and, you know, working on the business. I was working in the business, very much an employee of the business is how, you know, how what my day-to-day looked like. And so what led me to get from, you know, just running the business and just trying to buy property here and there to where I'm at today is, you know, I figured out, number one, I think I'm ready to hang up my hat with that particular business. And it just so happened I got an email one day, a cold outreach that we want to buy your business. And so that kind of prompted the whole, okay, I'm going to have conversations with that guy. Then I'm going to go get a broker. And I try to figure out what's my business worth. I never sold a business before. And I also got, the business was offered on pretty quickly. And then I thought, I don't want to jump to this because what if I'm selling myself short? You know, it could be a good deal. And then if so, yeah, take it. But you could also be leaving money on the table. And that's what you've worked for. That's why a lot of people are in business. And so long story short, after many conversations, I was able to work a deal with the original guy that had reached out. Amazing buyer. I couldn't have asked for a better transition. Like all of our key staff, it's now been 2 years. And literally every key player is still there with him. So that's a testament of, you know, how it was passed along. And afterwards, when I sold the business, that was my first step from thinking, okay, I need to figure out what am I going to do now? You know, I wanted to go buy another business, honestly, like I was ready to go. And then I had to take a step back and be like, look, I couldn't focus on my family. You know, I was, I had the time. Yeah. I was able to say, I'm going to go be with my kids all the time, but I didn't because work, like my company pulled me in, or, you know, I was very much engulfed in the day to day. So real estate was kind of the answer. And I figured out like, okay, I sold the business and I needed to figure out where am I going to place this money and what should I do next? And real estate was that answer, but not the way I was doing it before. The approach that I took this time was on the passive route. And for those of you listening that aren't quite sure about that, it's when somebody else runs the day to day. Then you're just putting in your money and you're trusting, and it is very much a trust, you know, it's a trust play. You are trusting somebody to run a property efficiently and act in your best interest. And as a result, you know, you don't get to make the day-to-day decisions, but you get to benefit from like tax benefits, the depreciation, cash flow, and whatever is to come from the upside later on that property. So that's how it all got started. There was someone in the industry that I had trusted and just known, followed for a while. You know, they had a online presence, and that was my very first, you know, investment as a passive investor. And then I kind of fell in love with it. You know, I was looking at it like, do I want to keep acquiring property myself each year and running it, or do I want to focus my efforts here? And so since then, it's been on more of, you know, larger projects, larger teams. Because I know that like there are many things that I was not good at as a, you know, or not the best at if I was doing it actively in myself. Number one, it's hard to acquire and you know, build up your portfolio. It's difficult with money to, you know, get one asset at a time. So this allows you to partner up. That was another thing that changed in my strategy, Mike, was I wasn't a partner guy before. And then afterwards I was like, I need some wisdom here because there's no way this is going to take me forever on my own. But I think because I was, you know, I was young, and even in business, I didn't have partners. And looking back and, you know, what I wish could have happened differently, you know, I think I would have partnered with somebody had I continued in that business, partnered with someone that could bring, you know, be that extra person with me to make these decisions. And I'll certainly do that the next go around. I think there's so much value in having partnerships. So that's what I look for now, just great people to invest with. And then eventually, you know, we can talk about that later, but I transitioned into the business side of that because I liked it so much. And I realized there's a huge gap between business owners that, you know, don't know what to do with all this excess cash that they may have from a successful business. And so that was kind of the transition for me getting involved in my business and what I do today.
It's interesting you mentioned about getting out of your own way because you talked about flipping earlier. That's why I stopped with flipping is, you know, we had done a flip just a little bit post-COVID and I did construction in college, so I have enough skills to be dangerous.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I was still working as an agent. And so I remember post-COVID, like there was issues with supply chain and workers and that kind of stuff. So it was, you know, hey, we're doing this flip. We need somebody to do this. And it's like, well, I can do it because I know how to do it. And I think I can do it quicker myself. And what it ended up doing is just sucking me out of my real estate agent job into working on a flip. And as surprises came up and things came up, our potential proceeds kept going down and down. And the end of the day, the kicker for us was the week we were going live, the furnace went out. And so we had to buy a new furnace. And that basically sucked up all the last remaining profit in the project. And I had spent months away from my family. The property was just a few minutes away. So like when I'd, you know, work on a Sunday, they'd pop by for lunch and say hi to me. And then I look up and it's like, I'm doing this for my family. And instead I sacrificed my family and I had nothing to show for it. And so that's how I got into multifamily is I said, I've got to do something where I can't get sucked into it because I love doing the work. I feel like I could do it, but I've got to get out of my own way. And so now going to a multifamily apartment in a city further away from where I live, I literally can't go put on my tool belt and start working on, you know, renovating the property. And so it was that piece of I had to put myself in a place to get out of my own way.
I'm so happy that you saw that. And you also mentioned the family component of it because, you know, there are two ways to look at this. A lot of people say, well, you know, sometimes she'll point this out. She'll say, hey, you've said before that you do it for the family, but you do it for you also. And she's right. Like there's a pride component to being able to build and play, you know, play the game, whether you're an entrepreneur or in real estate. And it's always knowing that, you know, you are continuing to advance, but yeah, byproduct of like what style investing or what work you choose is time and sacrifice with your family. So, you know, to your point, that was the aha moment when I was getting out of the business. I didn't know how absent I was, even though I was like physically there, I wasn't mentally there with my family. And that's been the biggest, you know, change in my life since. And, you know, to your point, like if you invest in properties that aren't in your city, you're not running by there and, you know, you're running it more like a business and less like a project because you can't go fix a leaky toilet in Chattanooga, Tennessee when you don't live there, right? So that's the benefit of it. So I'm glad you brought that up though.
So talk about on the limited partner side. So you had mentioned you found people that you knew and trusted in terms of kind of placing your funds with them. For those people that might be interested in being a limited partner, maybe talk through that process of vetting out or even like learning about what opportunities are out there. You've spent more time on the mobile home park side and debt funds and things like that. But talk about choosing what asset class and kind of what opportunities you might pursue and kind of educating yourself and networking to make that happen.
Yeah. So if you want to get started as an LP, basically those are limited partners. You're the passive person putting in money to a deal. And the best way to get started, number one, is get yourself comfortable with what you're investing into and identify with like, you may not know what asset class you want to get involved with because there is a lot. There's land, self-storage, multifamily apartments, mobile home parks, whatever it may be, you know, figure out where your risk tolerance is. For example, like land development generally has higher, you know, higher risk, higher reward. You may make more at the end of that, but you're not going to have any cash flow for a while until that development sells. It may not sell as it should, or, you know, on the flip side, you can have something that's very low risk that's going to cash flow day one. That's more of what you consider stable. So A, find out what you are, you know, what aligns with your risk tolerance. And then to your point, you know, you have to really dive in. It was the most difficult thing for me was, I mentioned trust earlier, was trusting. So I was used to doing everything myself. And you can't trust anybody more than you can trust yourself. And so you have to be able to figure out, like, am I that person? Am I a good fit for that style of investment? Because if you're, you know, knocking down someone's door, asking them how they're running it, and constantly, you know, it's not good enough, it's not the way I would do it, you're probably not a good passive investor. Like, stick, do it yourself and be good at it, right? Like, there's no problem with that. You need to ask the right questions though. And that's the hardest thing. And still, you know, for people today, especially with like new partnerships, that can be the most challenging thing, is like figuring out who you're going to work with. Cause like you've seen it in multifamily. There are so many deals. There's so many properties out there, and like, you'll look at it and you'll get this investment deck that shows all the returns and the pro formas. And a lot of it all starts to blend together. And you really have to look at, who is that individual that's running it? Are they going to step up to bat when something goes wrong? Do I trust this? Do I like them? I think you should like the people that you invest with too. Like, just because if you ever have a meeting with someone and they intimidate you, or you think like, man, that's a high caliber guy. Like, he must know what he's doing. You maybe should align yourself with somebody, you know, who you think, no, I can partner with that person, even though you're not doing the day to day. Because you want to be able to pick up the phone and know that if something goes wrong, because in real estate, something will go wrong eventually, especially as people like have high aspirations. And you have to know, like, is that person going to be there to pick up the phone and, you know, take an earful from, you know, whoever's calling them. And so, I read a lot. I looked at, try to look at track records of people, try to ask them about their failures. Make sure they tell you failures. I failed as an LP. I lost money before I got into the business. I met with somebody in person and I thought, okay, this is going to be great. You can never judge someone's character. And I lost, it's not official, but I will lose my entire investment. And these are like the painful lessons that, you know, as you're investing, I never factor in that risk. You know, you look at all these underwriting models and then you think, okay, how is this going to work? And is this safe? But, you know, at the end of the day, real estate is a people business as well. And so, long story short, make sure you're very comfortable with that person and that you feel like, this is a good steward of my money. Don't invest until you're fully comfortable. Don't get pressured into investing with someone that you're like, I don't know about that guy, but it seems like a cool opportunity. Like, that is your gut telling you to not do it, and you shouldn't.
So talk a little bit about Run Steady Investments and what you're doing today.
Yeah, so as I transitioned, you know, I learned a lot as a passive investor. I found out that, like, this is a business that I want to build. Beyond just investing in stuff, I want to help others, because I wish somebody would have come to me 10 years ago and saying, you can do it a different way. You don't have to try to buy a property a year and add it to your plate. Your plate's already full. And so when I started Run Steady, I try to build a business for me and for what I wanted as an investor. So I talked about risk tolerance earlier. I'm a low risk guy. I was fortunate to be able to sell my company, and I didn't want to go gamble it away with something that I felt was high risk. So right now, I essentially build a network of, you know, exclusive real estate deals where people can co-invest with me. I put all my own money into every deal, and we find leverage or use the experience of the day-to-day operators that are actually running the property management, dealing with tenants, to where we are not doing it, they are. And so I will pre-vet these individuals. You know, we talk about partnerships and trust. I'll invest my own money with them first, make sure they're communicating properly. And then if it comes to a point where, like, this is a good deal that I want to bring others in on, then there's the business component of that is, you know, I'll go out to the property, walk the property, poke holes in their underwriting, you know, making sure, are they being aggressive? Did they miss something? When you see somebody that's going to, you know, jump revenue by 20%, but drop expenses by 30%, like, maybe not, you know, they might not be able to do that. And so my job is basically an extra layer of security. And then, but when I said I built it for me, it's like before anybody else can get involved, like I have to be the one to do it. And I have to be ready and comfortable making that investment because I'm the first investor in all those deals. So I think that there's an association of like, okay, if I'm willing to put up money and, you know, tell my wife and to make this a good move for my family, I'm not going to bring it to anybody else until I genuinely believe that that's all set up. And I background check the people that I'm working with. You know, you do everything that you can to make sure that this is going to be a solid investment for people. And then number one rule, you know, don't lose money. That's old Warren Buffett's rule. And it's like everybody, you know, that should be what you're looking for first. Okay, I'm promised this return, but let's talk about preservation of capital. How can I lose? And that's what you really want to focus on. You want that downside protection to figure out how will this be protected if something goes wrong? Will I just not get the returns, or is it all going away? If it all goes away, you know, walk away from that deal and don't get involved. But that's kind of the style that I take every approach. And so I have an email list. People can get on the list, and then we announce our deals that way.
I remember early on when I was working on multifamily, one of the guys said to me, yeah, there's kind of three phases of investing like that. It's phase number one, or kind of step number one, you're not going to take my money and I'm not going to get nothing back. Step two is really like, I'm going to give you money and I'm going to at least get that amount back. And then step three is you're actually going to help me make money with the money that I give you. So yeah, there's a few pieces to that.
You want them taking you to step three for sure.
Right. Right. Yeah. At minimum, step two.
That's right.
Yes, absolutely. Step three.
And I'll add one thing that I forgot to mention. It was the tax benefit was something that really drew me into when I sold the business. We were fortunate enough to be real estate professionals. My wife was no longer working after we had our second kid, and she runs our Airbnbs. And so that year, that was another part of my journey getting pretty heavily involved with this was trying to offset some of the taxes from the sale that year and from my income. That was a unique year, but even now that's my goal moving forward because of having real estate professional status. It's like, how can I zero out my income by making investments and growing wealth at the same time? So that's what I like helping business owners try to figure out. Not all of them can apply. You know, they can't write it off against, you know, their ordinary income because they have to have real estate professional status, but there's still some amazing tax benefits to it along the way. So I like just, you know, educating people, letting them know that there are other ways besides, you know, paying the highest tax bracket every year because nobody likes giving it back to the government.
Yeah. And as I find, you know, yeah, the wealthier people, that's really more of what they're focused on is wanting to find those opportunities to do that. They're less focused about the cash flow because they have cash flow coming in from businesses or whatever else it is. And so really finding ways to park capital into real estate and, you know, take care of some of those benefits on the tax side as much as possible, it gets to be a high priority for them.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It's like a whole new class of its own. It like doesn't matter. Like we talk about multifamily or, you know, commercial buildings, whatever it is, like, no, some people, to your point, just focus on where's my tax preservation? How am I going to keep this in my family till we keep growing it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah. Cool. Well, for people that want to reach out to you and learn more about what you're doing, how can they do so?
Yeah. So for this show, and we'll include it in the show notes, have a free gift that's basically like a passive investor cheat sheet. If anyone's interested in figuring out what it looks like when you're first transitioning or first looking at a new partner, when you want to be a passive investor. So that will be in the show notes and you can download that little PDF. In addition to that, my website's runsteadyinvestments.com. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. You can find me there, Ian Noble One. That's the best way to find me. And I'm always available. We're not, you know, a big company. I like people to be able to reach me on my cell. So these are all ways once you're in our network that, you know, we have access to talking to you and just figuring out how we can help you.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing. Exciting to see kind of what you've done and where your journey's taken, and cool to hear where it's going to continue to go. So best of luck to you guys as you guys continue to grow and pursue your real estate passion. I don't have a direct say in who those people are that are hired as executives, what they do, what the company's actions are. And ultimately, if they made a decision like that and I all of a sudden disagree with it, stock drops, then I want to sell my shares. Right now, it's a moral decision mixed with a money decision. And I've got to decide, am I going to, you know, sell when it's low and lock in those losses? Or am I going to wait it out and see what happens? I don't know. Welcome to the Real Freedom Show, where we inspire you to pursue your passion to gain time and financial freedom through opportunities in real estate. I'm your host, Mike Swenson. Let's get some real freedom together. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Real Freedom. I am your host, Mike Swenson. If you want to get started on your real estate investing journey, check out our website, freedomthroughrealestate.com. That's freedomthroughrealestate.com. We've got lots of great information out there, articles, past episodes, blogs, you name it, to help you find a path of somebody that's maybe been on our show before and might resonate with you, find a topic, a certain area of real estate that you want to pursue that resonates with you. And so that's why we exist here, to be able to highlight awesome people doing great things in real estate and to inspire you to take action. And so today's episode is a little bit different. I try to do some episodes where I get a chance to share some information myself, not have a guest on, and just kind of get a chance to talk about things. And so one of the things that I wanted to talk about today is, you know, we address what are some reasons why people choose to invest in real estate versus investing in other things? And so today, the main focus of our topic, at least at the beginning of the episode, is we're going to cover why people who invest in real estate like the fact that they're in more control of their asset. There's a tangibility to it that you see versus investing in stocks or mutual funds or other things like that that aren't physical, tangible things. And so I'm not saying everybody's not comfortable with it. You know, I should start with a disclaimer. This is not real estate investing advice. This is not investing advice in general. I'm just sharing some examples of some things that people who have invested in real estate seem to resonate with. And so just something for you to think about if you haven't invested in real estate, if maybe you've invested in stocks before, just some things that I've heard from feedback from people about why they really enjoy investing in real estate. That being said, I'll also add a second disclaimer, right? Make sure you diversify, because stuff happens. And so if you want to primarily be in real estate, great. If you want to diversify into other areas, great. I will also say inside of real estate, there's lots of opportunities to diversify as well. So that being said, I want to talk a little bit about just that tangibility. And so today's episode, we're actually classifying as from Tesla to Target, real estate versus stocks when executives cause chaos. And so the longer that I've been investing in real estate, the more that I do appreciate that control aspect where I know what my money's invested in. Some of our properties are, you know, an hour away, 2 hours away. Some are maybe 5 or 6 hours away. That being said, I can go touch that property, right? It's a physical thing. Not only is the property itself valuable, the land that it's built on is valuable. There may be times down the road where we decide, hey, you know what? Maybe we knock this property down if it's getting up there enough in years. Maybe the zoning has changed. Maybe some new opportunities have changed. Maybe we acquire a nearby lot and it provides an opportunity to build something. So while the property itself has value, the land that it's built on also has value. And so there's lots of different ways that we can add value to what we own. And so I like that piece. I like the fact that we have a say over who we hire, right, to manage that property. So as of right now, this recording, we've chosen to work with property managers versus self-managing. You know, I think for me, I just, at this point, I really don't have a desire to self-manage. And we have some great relationships that we're trying to leverage more and more of people who do a great job and enjoy managing the properties for us. And so we work hand in hand with them. I like the fact that the person that's responsible for finding tenants and placing tenants has a criteria in place. I can see what that criteria is as it comes to credit, background check, income, that sort of stuff. You know, we have leases that we have control over what's on that lease, what we're asking the tenants to do, what happens if they don't do that. Obviously, some of this stuff is out of our hands, right? Regulations from the city, the county, the state, how they decide to handle tenants is a little bit of out of our control, but we can also then choose to go invest in a state where it does meet our needs. And so just kind of that control piece is really what we're kind of focusing on here. That being said, contrast that with stocks. You know, I don't know what strategy you guys have used in the past for picking stocks or picking mutual funds, or, you know, when you invest in an IRA, you might just pick here's an IRA based on my retirement year, and then they automatically allocate things. And so I know for me and for my wife, when we chose those, I didn't really know what stocks we were investing in. I didn't know where our money was going. Some of it was here locally, some of it was international stocks, bonds, mutual funds, that kind of stuff. And so I didn't really know where my money was. I was just going, picking a stock based on past performance or projected performance or risk tolerance. So I didn't really have a handle on that. And the other thing that's really been a little bit more of an eye opener for me, the more that I invest in real estate, is how we don't have control what happens with these companies that we may invest in, right? We might pick good people and yet things change, right? Like in Apple, when Steve Jobs stepped down, their stock went down. And now I will say, the examples that I'm giving here, once stocks go down, people see, hey, maybe it's on discount. We pick some of those stocks back up. The bigger point here is we have much less control over what happens with some of these companies. And so as of right now, the hot topic as of when I'm recording this is Cracker Barrel, right? So I've got a couple of blurbs here that I'm just going to read from each of these companies that I'm giving examples. So Cracker Barrel, right? August 2025, they launched a $700 million rebranding effort under their CEO, replacing their old logo with a minimalist kind of text-only design with an attempt to modernize the brand, right? And in the interviews, we heard them say, you know, we polled our store. They really like this modern brand. They really like what we're doing. We've heard great feedback. This goes public and all heck breaks loose, right? So within days, Cracker Barrel stock plunged 7% on the announcement and ultimately dropped 12% within that day, erasing nearly $100 million in market value. And all this criticism came down, and what ended up happening, they said, hey, thank you so much for giving us our feedback. We are in line with our customers and their wants and needs, and they get to express their opinion. So you know what? Actually, we're going back. Right? So $700 million spent on rebranding, that was just an oops. And, you know, for me, those are the stories that resonate with me of like, I'm not confident in that. If I'm choosing something that I have more control over versus something like that, don't get me wrong, I love eating at Cracker Barrel. Our family just went there a couple months ago, really enjoyed it. Awesome restaurant. If I decided to put my money there and something like that happened, now I'm in my low 40s, right? Anything that happens, there's some time to make it up. What if I didn't have time to make that up, right? In my investments. And so that's the thing, that as I get older and older, I like that idea of being more and more control, right? So that's Cracker Barrel. Another example, Bud Light. Bud Light 2023 partnered with a transgender influencer in a promotional campaign tied to March Madness. The move got immediate backlash, leading to widespread boycotts of Bud Light and other beverages that they also owned. And so you had high profile creators, celebrities, that sort of thing, that were expressing their concern and the financial fallout. So this happened in April, mid-April. Bud Light's weekly sales had plunged 21%. Off-premise sales were down 26% by early May. Revenue fell 10% over the second quarter, and operating profit dropped by nearly 30%. The company potentially lost up to $1.4 billion due to the boycott. Now, whether you enjoy Bud Light, don't enjoy Bud Light, obviously who they hired didn't seem to match well with their brand. So this isn't about who it is. It could be anybody that they chose that the company didn't like. So whether it was a transgender person, whether it was somebody else, the example that I'm giving here, just to be clear, is not about who it was. It's that executives made a decision on the company. I have my money invested in Bud Light. All of a sudden, executives make a decision that tanks the stock price, right? So depending on who it was, right? It could have been Taylor Swift. And, you know, for some reason, people didn't like Taylor Swift being associated with Bud Light, right? So it's not about who it was. It's about the decision that's outside of our control. So that's what I want the focus to be on here. It's a decision that's outside of our control. Dropped $1.4 billion in sales, potentially, due to that decision. Another example, example number three here, we've got Tesla. So Tesla's had a couple here in the last few years. So we've got September 2018, Elon Musk appeared on the Joe Rogan Experience and took a puff from what was described as a marijuana and tobacco joint. Immediate backlash the following day, Tesla's stock dropped roughly 6% by close and had fallen as much as 9% throughout the day, making it one of the sharpest single day declines in months, right? So CEO goes on a podcast, commits some sort of action, right? Agree or disagree, doesn't matter. And all of a sudden, boom, potential 9% of your, you know, let's say you put $100,000 into Tesla. Now you're at $90,000, right? And so over time, right? I'm kind of leaning at more of the short-term decision here. Over time, that changes. June 2025, we all know about Elon Musk's relationship with President Trump. You know, Trump announced the big, beautiful bill, and Elon came back and said it was a disgusting abomination that slashed crucial electric vehicle tax credits and threatened government contracts. And so that clash, Tesla's stock tumbled approximately 14% in a single day, marking the largest one-day drop in years and wiping out an estimated $150 to $152 billion in market value, right? Political disagreement, $152 billion in value of this company. Now, what changed in that company? And in some of these cases, right, the value of the company, it's still the same company, but it's the public perception, it's the media backlash and all that kind of stuff. It's that sends these stocks all over the place that causes concern. And then the last example that I wanted to give here is Target. So January 2025, Target announced it would phase out several long-standing DEI initiatives as part of its new branding strategy. Sharp backlash, civil rights leaders, socially conscious consumers protested a 40-day consumer boycott. Target stock fell roughly $27 per share, collectively erasing $12.4 billion in market value. And in February, the state of Florida filed a lawsuit accusing Target of misleading shareholders about risks tied to its DEI changes. And so additional follow-up from that. So the reason I give a few of those examples is think about what you're investing in. I want to be clear, I'm not endorsing or not endorsing any one of these companies, any one of these people that were mentioned. It's more about I don't have a say in that decision and what happens. I don't have a direct say in who those people are that are hired as executives, what they do, what the company's actions are. And ultimately, if they made a decision like that and I all of a sudden disagree with it, stock drops, then I want to sell my shares. Right now, it's a moral decision mixed with a money decision. And I've got to decide, am I going to, you know, sell when it's low and lock in those losses? Or am I going to wait it out and see what happens? I don't know. And so that's what I want to talk with you about. If you've considered, you know, investing in real estate and you feel like real estate is risky, go back to these, right? There's a lot of risk in investing in the stock market. Are you looking to get started or scale in real estate investing but don't know your next step? Are you overwhelmed thinking about finding deals, analyzing deals, doing due diligence, and managing properties on top of it? Go ahead and push the easy button and invest with us. Real estate investing is what we do full time. We've done dozens of deals with hundreds of doors. We have the knowledge and experience to handpick the best deals that most investors can't find. We've got large off-market deals all the time where you can hopefully find returns and economies of scale that you just can't find on your own. The best thing is it's 100% passive to you for less capital than you put down trying to acquire a property on your own. Don't let this year go by where you don't make the leap, add to your portfolio, or you just sit in analysis by paralysis. To find out more, visit freedomthroughrealestate.com and click on invest. You can book a call and learn more there. So get to scaling your portfolio now with us by your side. And so what I do want to close with the episode with is just share a few of the things of how you can feel in control of your investment, right? So I've covered this before. It doesn't change, right? The cool reasons to invest in real estate don't necessarily change over time. It's kind of the tried and true. Cash flow from rental income. Residential or commercial properties, right, generate income. You control rent pricing. So if I want to try to squeeze out a little bit more of rent, I can do that. If we're making the mortgage payments, we're hitting what we want to hit and we don't have to increase rents, I don't have to increase rents, right? I can work with my property manager and I can set that strategy. Tenant selection, right? I get to control how strict or lenient I am on tenant selection. Who are the people that I'm allowing? Now, that being said, we can't discriminate, right? So we have a universal boundary of here's who we're selecting or here's who we're, you know, here's kind of the criteria of who we're selecting. And as long as those people fall within that, right, you're either accepted or you're not accepted. And so you have the power to be able to do that. You also have the power of expenses, right? Trash company, bills getting a little high. I can go call out to other trash companies and find out if I can save some money. If I want to, you know, implement something else, something like solar panels, right? I get a decision. Do I want to put solar panels on the top of my building that might save me money down the road? What types of light bulbs I use, how I want to control utility costs, whether I pay it, the tenant pays it, right? I am in control of that decision. Now, there's some costs associated with it, but I get to be the one that makes those decisions about how my asset is performing. Appreciation and value, right? Number two here, real estate typically appreciates over time, right? Short term, sometimes there's blips, right? Stocks, there's blips. Real estate, there's blips. But over time, we tend to see that those values appreciate. A stock may not necessarily appreciate if it's, you know, a stock that's, you know, going down, like a Blockbuster Video or something like that. When it's starting to go down, you don't have a say over how it goes back up, right? And so in real estate, sometimes those values go down. Over time, though, they tend to bounce back. And so if I pick a bad stock, I can't get that chance to get my money back necessarily. In real estate, if I can choose to wait longer, those values tend to recover. I am a shining example of that. Our very first rental property that we had, or our first property we had, we turned into a rental property because the value got cut in half, right? I didn't have control over that. I decided to hold for the next 10 years and values came back and we ended up turning that bad story into a great success because we made money at the end of the day because we held on to it. So that's the appreciation in commercial property. So kind of reason number three here why I like investing in real estate, forced appreciation. In commercial real estate, it's really income goes up, expenses go down, and the value of the property goes up. So if I want the property to be worth more, how do I find ways to increase income? How do I find ways to decrease expenses? And for those that maybe haven't known or looked into commercial real estate, right, there's a cap rate. And that cap rate helps to dictate kind of the price of the property. And so I can have control over that cap rate by how I manage the property, the expenses that I choose. I can also choose if I want to get more rents, maybe I sink some money into it. I put in some new floors, put in some new kitchens, dishwashers, improve the landscaping, help the curb appeal, make more tenants want to come in there, maybe be willing to pay a little bit higher price. I have control over that through the decisions I make working with our property manager. Tax benefits and deductions, right? There's a lot of great depreciation. I'd love to talk more about the tax benefits. It's a little bit more tricky because everybody has different situations. For us personally, the more property that we own, the better our taxes have turned out, right? We have more depreciation. We do cost segregation studies, which accelerates that depreciation during the hold period. And so puts a little bit more cash into our pockets. And so there's some great benefits there. You get to deduct the interest, 1031 exchange, right? If there's a taxable event, we can defer that by choosing to do a 1031 exchange. So there's a lot of great tax benefits and deductions out there that we can take advantage of. Equity buildup, right? This is kind of a sneaky little one, which I love. With every mortgage payment, you increase your ownership stake. So for me, going back to my initial townhouse example, because we were kind of stuck, right? And we had to hold onto the property, the rent was basically covering the expenses every month. So we were kind of cash flow neutral, but every month when I would go look at that mortgage statement, I'd see it go down by $200, $300. Then it was like $350. Then it was $400. When we sell that property, you see those benefits, right? You may not see it month to month, but it's a lot harder to set aside $400 a month to save than to have somebody paying off your mortgage and that $400 is going back into the bank over time, right? Now on some of our larger apartment buildings, I'm seeing $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 a month. Now we're sharing that with other owners, but that's the amount of principal that's being knocked off those mortgage payments every single month. And so it's that slow stuff, right? Real estate, get rich a little bit more slowly, but all these little buckets, all these little cool things that are happening compound over time. I'm hedging against inflation. So this is number six on my list here. As inflation goes up, we have a little bit more control over that because the cost of living might go up. So we might be able to increase rents. So it's just a little bit of a hedge against inflation there by owning rental property. Portfolio diversification, right? So I can diversify the types of properties I invest in, the areas I invest in, the asset classes that I invest in. I could invest in a single family home in Washington. I could invest in a multifamily property in Florida. I could invest in a mobile home park in Maine, and I can invest in a hotel in California. Didn't even mean to have the Hotel California reference. I just came up with that one on the fly, right? You can choose all those different asset classes and you can diversify yourself. So lots of different things that you can do within housing to be able to diversify yourself. And then syndications, right? So syndications is an opportunity to be more passive. Now, that being said, anybody who's invested in our syndications has my phone number, my email address, and probably can find my mailing address and show up at my door and say, what's going on with the property? And me, hopefully being a good syndicator, will answer them, right? Do you have the CEO of Target cell phone number, email address, and address where you could go talk to them if you're like, hey, stock's down a little bit, what are you planning on doing here, right? And so while in a syndication, there's more of a passive feel to it, you maybe don't have direct control over each and every decision. You're getting updates and you can call. And if you're pissed at me, you can call me and tell me you're pissed at me and I'll listen to your feedback. And then my job is to be able to be a representative of you and to honor the strategy that we've put in place for how we are going to manage that asset. And then upon sale, you know, return that capital back to you and decide what you want to do with it afterwards. And so there's an ability over time for that to grow more and more passive, to have more and more income coming in consistently. So those are some of the reasons why I feel like for people that maybe haven't invested in real estate or haven't done much of it, you actually do have a lot more control over what happens than you think you do. And so just contrasting that to stocks, like I mentioned, the examples that I gave are more public examples. Yes, I totally understand stocks go down. Sometimes they go back up. It's just that feeling of I don't have control or I have much less control over what happens in a real estate that I wanted to highlight here for you. And so if you're considering investing in real estate, if you're kind of toying around with what do I do, what asset classes, I'm always here to help. If you go to freedomthroughrealestate.com, we have all this information. There's ways where you can reach out to me, connect with me, happy to guide you through, happy to answer questions that you have. And so that wraps it up for today. From Tesla to Target, real estate versus stocks when executives cause chaos. Hope you guys enjoyed that. It's once again, like I said, the information as far as why invest in real estate, that doesn't really change and it's not planning on changing, but it's also good to be reminded why I do what I do, why I continue to invest in real estate and why I'm sold on the benefits of this versus other asset classes. And I know, like I said, we're going to diversify, we're going to do different things, but for me, that's the reasons why I love real estate. If you've got any questions, feel free to reach out. Like I said, go to our website, let us know if you have any questions, and hope you guys have an amazing day.